You're listening to the Big Three of B2B Leadership Podcast with Mike Faherty, where world-class business leaders share their secrets for personal, organizational, and market growth. Gain powerful insights from industry leaders that have been tested by the fire.
Hey everyone, my name is Mike Faherty, and I'm your host today of the Big Three of B2B Leadership. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Chris Kenton. Chris is CEO and founder of Social Rep. He's a thought leader in the area of social media selling, and in particular, his focus has been on the technology market, I think, for the bulk of his career. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm really excited to have Chris with me today. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, look, I want to talk about social selling. I want to get into your company, Social Rep, and learn a little bit more about what you guys do, because I think it's really, really interesting. But before I do that, I like to do a little research on folks. And I went through your LinkedIn profile, and you have a really interesting position that you've held for the last 5 years that I just have to understand because it just caught my attention. So what can you tell me about the Drake mountain bike team? I got to know.
So the Drake mountain bike team is, first of all, it's a high school, Sir Francis Drake High School in San Anselmo, California. We're right at the home of where mountain biking was invented back in the, depending on which stories you read, back in the 70s, mid-70s. A lot of the leading lights of mountain biking, people like Otis Guy, Gary Fisher, Charlie Cunningham, Joe Breeze, they're all locals and neighbors. And I actually wound up not knowing it, but I bought a house right at the bottom of the hill where mountain biking was invented, the famous Repack Trail. And I was out raking leaves before Thanksgiving, right after we moved in, and didn't know that the largest unorganized mountain biking ride in the world has been going on for about 45 years, that goes down Repack and celebrates the birth of mountain biking. It goes right down my street. And so I was out there raking leaves and saw about, you know, I don't know, maybe somewhere between 800 and 1,000 mountain bikers going by my house, and went out the next day and bought my first mountain bike. And I've been mountain biking ever since. So, so it's fantastic. You know, it keeps me fit, keeps me out on my bike, introducing kids to mountain biking. And the team itself, we've got nine state championships. So it's a very competitive team. It's larger than the football team, much to the chagrin of the football coach. it's great. Fantastic sport.
That's awesome. Well, what a cool story. I knew there had to be something to it. It just caught my attention. That was a new one for me. So I wanted to ask you about it. So thanks for sharing that. So how did you first become interested in marketing? Where did that start for you?
Okay, so it's a really long story, which I'll try to make really short. I thought I was going to go to medical school, and I was working at the Stanford University Trauma Center as a basically as a tech on the floor. And I started asking everyone that went through the hospital, because it's a teaching hospital, you have physicians at every stage of their career, from medical students to attending physicians to specialists that are going through there. And I started getting in the habit of asking every doctor that I came in contact with, would you do it over again? And surprisingly, the overwhelming answer that I got was uncertainty. Only about two or three people out of several hundred that I asked said definitively, yes, they would do it again. Most people hemmed and hawed, started talking about, you know, the debt that they carried, the lack of control that they had because insurance companies were calling the shots. And that led me away from deciding to go to medical school. I took a year off, but that actually turned out to be sort of my first market research. Both my parents were writers. My mother was a market researcher. And it turned out that there was something in the, maybe something in the gene pool, where I realized I was far more interested in digging into questions and figuring out where, people's interests lie and how that moved markets, And that was sort of my first dive into market research.
So I know you studied literature.
Yep.
So how has that impacted sort of the trajectory of your career and the types of marketing maybe that you were drawn to?
So when I took a year off, I was traveling overseas and decided when I came back that I wanted to go to school, not to pursue sort of a connect the dots kind of a career, but I just wanted to go to school to study something that I was really interested in. And so I went to UC Santa Cruz and studied creative writing. When I got out of school with no idea of what I was going to do, I wound up working at a newspaper because, you know, newspapers need writers. And so I walked onto my first job at a newspaper just by turning in a couple of articles on spec. And from there, I spent some time as an editor working for various magazines and was exposed much more deeply to marketing at that point. At times I would have to write house ads, for example, for the magazine, write, some articles and some, advertorials. So that sort of got my feet in the water around marketing and especially PR. And, I left originally that role. I started to not really enjoy that kind of writing, where it was writing for commercial purposes, ironically. Started a software company initially to develop some products around training. And I thought that that was going to be more interesting to me than writing. And then what happened, sort of just serendipity, I was working on this software company right as the internet was taking off. I'm going to date myself here. So this is the mid-90s. And my wife wanted to go back to school to become a librarian. And we had a choice of either going to Iowa or San Jose. And I'd grown up in the Bay Area, had no desire to go to San Jose. I said, great, we're going to Iowa. And the next day, a friend of mine in the Bay Area called and asked me if I was looking for a job because she worked for a technical magazine in the Bay Area. And they had a role there for somebody that they wanted to build their first major website to take all of their 10 years of content in programming and build a website around it. And because I had been building the software company, she knew that I was actually looking to move on to something else. And I walked right into this job. It was with a company called Fawcett Technical Publications that published titles like Visual Basic Programmers Journal and Java Pro Magazine. And they were building a website that utilized a lot of the first generation of technology that's now all the bedrock of the web. So ad rotation systems, content management systems, membership and personalization systems. I remember back then we were working with some of Jeremy Allaire's first tools around Cold Fusion and HomeSite. And so that kind of just dropped me in the deep end of technology. I had to learn all about client server technologies and, you know, all of the kind of programming stuff while building a website and a community, which at the time was called DevX, the Developers Exchange. We built that community around 25,000 programmers worldwide, sharing content and information around all different types of programming challenges. And my role was basically bringing the technology together to build the site, bring in the the content management and the advertising and all of that. And so from that point on, my career has always been sort of at this core of the intersection of media, technology, and marketing. And I've maintained different roles, started a couple of businesses in that space, but always at that intersection of media, technology, and marketing communications.
So let's talk about social rep. Let's talk about how that intersection has manifested itself in your latest venture. So what was the genesis behind social rep, and tell us a little bit more about what you guys do.
So the story is that eventually I found myself working in, I joined an agency. So after I left the Developers Exchange, my experience with web development suddenly became really valuable. I was looking around at what I really enjoyed, and I found that I actually really enjoyed working with designers. And in a sense, I enjoyed working with designers more than engineers at the time, because engineers, in my experience at that time, were always looking at technology, at whatever was the latest thing, and looking at how they could use that to build something. So, you know, Java Beans is the new thing, so we got to do everything in Java Beans. And what designers were looking at was, you know, hey, we've got a specific problem that we need to solve in getting people to understand this issue or this idea. How do we approach that? And I found that really fascinating. And so I found an agency in San Francisco, a branding agency that had a great tradition and a great portfolio of work that they had done in world-class branding, corporate identity, packaging. And they were looking for somebody that could take them into the new world of digital branding. And so I joined them as sort of the digital partner, and we had a great run for about 8 years doing some of the first integrated design work in San Francisco, right in the middle of the dot-com boom. So a lot of that crazy stuff of these, you know, outrageous budgets and things, you know, just developing crazy websites. And when the crash came, when the bust happened in the dot-com space, we kind of augured into the ground, my first real significant business failure, where we had to lay off about 40 employees. You know, we you know, just watched all of our income dry up, and we were crawling through the desert before we finally decided to wind down that agency. And I went to work for the Chief Marketing Officers Council, the CMO Council, and spent a couple of years working with CMOs, largely looking at the challenges that they faced. One of the biggest things that we were focused on at the time was CRM, understanding how to utilize CRM properly, how to do marketing automation and sales automation. And while in that role, I was getting really frustrated with marketers overall, where it felt like a lot of the focus in these big summits that we would do was more on where's the next job opportunity, as opposed to really understanding the challenges that marketing was facing. And when I started to look at, okay, well, who around the table that I'm engaging with is really involved and really, you know, focused on these problems, it looked to me like back of the napkin analysis, it was like about 8%. And a lot of those people at the time were really focused on social media and understanding, you know, what's going on with blogs at the time. LiveJournal, Blogger, Typepad were emerging platforms at that time. People were really excited about what they could do with blogs. And so I left the CMO Council initially to start an agency again focused on social media. And so we went out to work with companies like Motorola, Sony were some of our first customers. And initially, I thought we were just going to be a services company. But what happened was we started to see that we could come up with great conceptual strategies about social media. That, hey, you should have a blog, you should talk about these things on your blog. But what we were missing was really robust data that would give us insight into where their customers were on social media. And all of the data was coming out of really only three sources at that time, those three sources that I mentioned, Blogger, Typepad, LiveJournal, where the firms like Nielsen Buzzmetrics and TNS Symphony, some of those early companies that were doing metrics on social media, were really only getting that data from an echo chamber of these very limited sources where they were crawling this data. And so we started to go out and look for where is the data that would help us. For example, when Motorola told us that they were getting their lunch money taken away by Nokia in working with developers, because Nokia was developing a much tighter relationship with developers than Motorola was, our first question was, okay, well, where are developers hanging out? What are they talking about? What are the issues that they're concerned about? And long and short of it, we couldn't get access to that information. We couldn't find that information. And so that launched us off in the direction of starting to develop our own technology. We started developing our own crawlers. We started working with things like what we call elastic crawlers to try to zero in on the content that would give us insight that we could then take back to Motorola as strategy. And that was how, that was sort of the genesis of SocialRep, was that need to get data. And for the first 5 years of our existence as a business, we really focused just on the intelligence piece, on developing crawlers, developing algorithms to mine crawlers. We got a patent on our algorithm and technology for how we score content to identify signal in the noise. And that was really where we got started, was trying to solve that problem of how do you mine relevant and actionable insight from social media data in order to inform strategy. And what happened that led us to where we are today, we spent years in partnership with companies like PwC and Deloitte, focused just on the intelligence piece. And over time, what we realized was developing a paper brick of intelligence that goes to the strategy decision makers and winds up sitting on the desk of a corner office for months at a time. Maybe those insights would by osmosis at some point work their way into actual product development. And what we started looking at was, well, hey, if we started to pump the intelligence that we're gathering directly to the front line of sales, so that, you know, when we're looking at salespeople who are having a conversation about security is the example I always use. We would listen to these guys who are selling security, literally having conversations with customers that sounded like, hey, everybody needs security. You need security. We sell security. How much do you need and how soon do you need it? We could change that conversation to, oh my God, did you see what happened to Home Depot last week? They lost, you know, a bunch of customer data. If a company with the resources they have can't protect themselves from this threat, then this is a threat for you too. How do we make sure that you're not exposed to this threat? And that really changed the trajectory of our company to where we are today, which is really focusing on our metric is what we call insight to revenue. How quickly can you identify some opportunity, risk, threat, advantage by mining information in the marketplace, primarily through social media data, and turn that into an insight that actually drives product development, outreach, sales conversations, so that you can make a move in the marketplace faster than your customer. And that's what we've resolved on today.
So what do you think, business leaders today need to know about social selling, this idea of using social as a platform, as a medium for engaging customers that maybe they don't appreciate right now?
Well, I mean, that's an easy layup in the sense that we've been saying this for a long time, that social media is not your traditional advertising media. And that argument has been made in many different ways for many years. Initially, the discussion was, you don't own your brand. That was kind of the first shot across the bow of business leaders that, you know, in these social media discussions, your customers and prospects are having conversations about your brand that you don't control. And that was sort of the first aha that, hey, this is something different. But they still, you know, by and large, tried to shoehorn social media into the same type of channel of communication as all of their paid media, meaning, you know, we'll carefully choreograph our message, we'll carefully target our market, we'll push this message to the market to try to influence our users And then as much as possible, we'll automate as much of that as possible so that we can scale it. And that led to a lot of things like social syndication, for example, where companies would say, hey, we'll create a canned feed of posts that tell the story you want to tell, and then we'll get all of these people to sign up to your feed so that they can turn over their Twitter feed into a billboard for your message. Whatever you tweet will automatically go out to their tweet and will amplify your brand. So now you're being talked about everywhere. The problem with that is that as attractive as that is from the standpoint of, hey, now we control our message, we can scale it, we can automate it, we don't have to worry about training somebody to say what we want them to say, we can put all of this on autopilot to scale, that looks really attractive to business leaders because it's cheap and it appears to be effective. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. And it doesn't work for a whole lot of reasons. And one of the key reasons is that one of the first ways that people zero in on that content is through search. They're looking for something. And so they search, let's say, on Twitter for cloud migration. And if you've been syndicating out this feed through all your partners, for example, we do a lot of work in the channel, and your partners are all tweeting exactly the same thing, then the first thing they see in their search results is these identical tweets, the same thing over and over and over and over again, coming from different partners, different brands, and it becomes immediately apparent to that user that there's no one there, that this is just a bot that is pushing this stuff out. And that's a problem not only for the brand, it's a problem for the partners because there's no differentiation among the partners. They all look like they're just being a sock puppet for these different brands. They're not thinking intelligently about the information that they're putting out. They're just being a billboard. And the message to the customer is, okay, I need to take whatever they say about this brand with a grain of salt because it's not their own brain speaking. So that's a big, big, big problem. So I think we're still learning, businesses are still learning, and they're gradually getting the message that there is a real fundamental need to elevate authenticity. You need to have salespeople who understand the customer problem. They haven't just read a training script, they're not just reading out of a playbook, but they have some understanding of what the customer problem is. They can speak to it with some level of intelligence, but more important than anything, they're showing up not with the attitude of how soon are you ready to buy and how big is your budget, but what is the problem that you're trying to solve and how can I help? And that's not that different from age-old approaches to what we used to call consultative selling or solution selling, where you're a partner with your customer trying to solve the problem. But businesses tend to look at everything new as a monolithic thing. Social selling. Okay, everybody's got to do social selling, and it's this one thing, rather than looking at it as a trajectory from marketing through sales development through sales, and understanding that different people in my organization at different stages of this process may be doing different things and may be showing up in different ways. So maybe we have some, you know, relatively canned brand content that our marketing team is putting out to position our voice in the marketplace. But my sales development people better have an authentic voice. They better understand the customer or be willing to have a conversation with the customer. And maybe those qualifying types of questions are really just done further down the road when somebody's raised their hand and said, yeah, this is a solution I might be interested in. Now it starts getting into a conversation around qualification. So I think that's the biggest thing that business leaders need to understand, that like everything else that they do, automation is great when you have identified things that you're already doing effectively, and automation can streamline the time that it takes to execute. But you cannot automate authenticity. Authenticity comes from a salesperson who understands the customer community, understands the problems that a customer is facing, and can bring some level of that understanding to a real conversation about those problems and not just how fast can I move you to a sales meeting.
Right. It's almost like if you take social as a, you know, as a channel, and you were to look at what you're talking about is the equivalent on the phone side of a robo dialer versus making an individual phone call and having a unique conversation with someone about what's important to them. The idea of just mass communicating the positioning. I agree with you. Look, every brand probably needs some degree of positioning on social. That it's just table stakes. You know, right. you need to put that out into the world that here's who we are, here's who we help, and here's how we help them. That needs to go out there. But when it comes to selling, which is different than branding and positioning, when it comes to selling, it's about engaging an individual who has a unique set of problems and then aligning your solution in a way that it solves those problems, or at least they would consider using that solution to solve the problem. So you've talked about the challenges and maybe some of the mistakes, if you will, that brands and manufacturers and organizations have made. Talk about the salesperson for a moment. Talk about the individual who's got a quota and he or she is just trying to find a way in the door with a prospect. Talk about some of the things you see them doing well on social and maybe some of the things that you think are just mistakes that you see a lot.
Sure. So it's a very heterogeneous space. So, you know, we're working with people that are at all levels of the age and experience sort of spectrum. Mm-hmm. I think it's surprising to me to see that there are people at all levels of that spectrum that have different attitudes and approaches to social media. So we see very senior people that are great at social media, despite people expecting them to be. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, you know, real understanding of customer problems is not a new trick, right? The technology might be new, but really understanding how to engage a customer is not new. Where we see a difference on the age spectrum is that younger salespeople are certainly more native to social technology. And so they know intrinsically that they can actually engage with people on places like Instagram, for example, that other people may just be going, well, that's just where I post pretty pictures, and not realizing that there are ways to engage people with that type of media. I think in terms of tactics and effectiveness, that's also a spectrum. You know, certainly we see salespeople who show up just saying, okay, well, show me how this tool is going to get me some leads right away. Probably not the best way to start out. But where we see people being effective in social media is really focusing on how do you meet customers where they are and start a conversation. A lot of people try different types of scripts. We see that all over LinkedIn right now. We don't see that working all that well. Where we see tactics working well are often around starting discussions. So choosing, let's say, a news piece about, let me give you a current example. So there's a lot of discussion right now around obviously security. Everybody's talking about security, but in particular, there's concern that leading up to the presidential election and the transition of power in January, there are signals that there are going to be some more concerted efforts at ransomware attacks, that there's going to be a lot more vulnerability to ransomware attacks. And in particular, a lot of that is focusing on the healthcare space to try to disrupt healthcare. So being able to, number one, track those types of trends as a salesperson. Be interested in what's going on for your customer community. Read the sources that your customers are reading and understand the signals that they're seeing, and then choose one of those articles that's talking about that. Don't just post it to LinkedIn and say, this is a great article that you should read, but take the time, you know, the 3 minutes it takes to read that article, to find something of interest in that article that you can call out and say, how are you experiencing this? That's a conversation starter. Saying this is a great post, same with comments. If you just go into a comment and say, well, this is a great post, there's nothing for really anyone to say to that. It's like, okay, well, thank you. You noticed that I wrote a great post. Instead, if you try to dig into that to see, well, what's interesting here and why is this interesting? What's different? What's changing? How does this impact people? That's a conversation starter. And so that's what you're looking for. And what you, I see a lot of people talking about, you know, trying to engineer these to get as quickly to the how much are you going to buy and how soon, right? They okay, we'll do a conversation starter, but we're going to try to engineer it to get as quickly to there as possible. You got to put that out of your mind when you're starting out in social media. You have to not be trying to figure out, okay, I really want to ask in that first moment, can I get you on a sales call? Can I get you to do a meeting? It's like, forget that. Let's just start to see if we can start a conversation. Because if we can't start a conversation, there's not going to be much reason for you want to set a meeting with me. So that, I think, is part of the challenge. Where we see salespeople being effective right now is going at social from the standpoint of trying to solve the first problem. And the first problem is, how do I engage somebody in a conversation? And whether that's sharing a piece of content and asking a question about it, which is a good start, or sharing a case study and asking people whether or not that case study meets up with their experience, or asking people what challenges they're facing, trying to get to that conversation starter before running to the end of the, you know, trying to make a run into the end zone. That's where we see people being effective.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more in terms of using social media to engage and to begin a conversation. It's almost an opportunity starter and not really an opportunity closer. There's different channels for different stages in that process, and that one should be used for opening the conversation. I agree. How would you coach the salesperson right now who has maybe a fear of the phone, right? And he or she is coming, found themselves in this role. Maybe they're early in their career, but not necessarily. And they see social media as the panacea, right? It is the thing that's going to keep them from having to make cold calls anymore, right? We've talked a lot about this over the last year or so. So there's a risk associated with that line of thinking, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, oftentimes, I think, like you said, you know, a lot of social media is about presence. What we talk a lot in our training is let me back up a half second here and just sort of lay the groundwork for this idea. So, I'm often really hesitant to ever use the word guru. People throw that word around, especially in marketing. Everyone who's written a book lately is a guru. And our attitude has far more been around the need for geeks more than gurus, because the idea of the guru is they always have an answer. They always have an answer for whatever it might be. Whereas a geek is somebody who's looking to try and figure out a problem. And we need a lot more geeks in marketing, looking at things as trying to figure out problems rather than having an answer. But what's interesting to me about the use of the word guru is that it conveys absolute trust from the market community in whatever that person has to say. And so we started looking at that as a way of understanding, well, what are sort of the pillars of that trust? When somebody says, oh, this guy's a guru, and everybody's going to go, okay, we're going to listen to whatever this guy says. well, what are the pieces of that that make that social trust? And what we finally resolved on are three pillars of social trust. One is knowledge. Does this person have an understanding of the domain where I have a problem? And if they have an understanding of that domain, then they deserve my trust for that understanding. The second is what we call presence, which in social media is just showing up in a way that effectively communicates the value that you can bring to that conversation. So that means being present on LinkedIn, being present on probably on various Facebook groups where there are professional discussions going on, probably in some groups on places like Reddit, on other, you know, maybe Spiceworks in the technology channel. But often a strong component of that presence is what we refer to as cadence, which is consistently sharing content in a voice that communicates your value to the community. And that's something that usually is a journey. People find their voice, they try sharing different things. Maybe they try sharing humor. Maybe they try sharing some 30-second videos. They're trying to find what works for them and what resonates, which is great. Try different things. But eventually you resolve out to a comfortable feeling of what content do you decide to share and how do you share it to communicate something of value to your customer community? That's the presence piece. And then the third piece is what we call authenticity. And authenticity is simply sort of the demonstration of your shared interest with your customer community. Your customer looks at you and says, oh yeah, you, it's not just that you know the information about my space, but you have communicated a shared interest in some way. Either it's because if you're in the healthcare space, you've got a deep passion for healthcare, you're really interested in the technology that goes above and beyond your knowledge of it. And the idea is, you know, it could be a shared interest, it could be a shared objective, a shared outlook. But ultimately, what that leads to, especially with thought leaders, is what we call an advocacy agenda. And what that means is, because you're a member of this community, again, using the example of healthcare, you can articulate an agenda for the future of that space that you think is important. As a member of the healthcare community for technology, I think it's really important for healthcare providers in the age of the COVID pandemic to be elevating contactless technologies like telemedicine, remote patient monitoring, contactless patient intake. That would be an advocacy agenda. And what it communicates is, I understand the customer community because I'm a member of it, and I have a real clear notion of a challenge that our industry faces and that we need to overcome. So for us as an organization, for Social Rep, our advocacy agenda right now is all around authenticity. That if you're going to be in social selling, you really need to build that authenticity to be a member of the customer community. If you don't have that, then what we recommend to salespeople to kind of learn the ropes is to find some social community that is around a hobby or an interest that you have independently of what you're doing as a salesperson. For me, that was mountain biking. I got really deeply involved in the mountain bike review community, posting all the time about my experience in mountain biking. And for a couple of years, I was far more active in the mountain biking community than anywhere else that I was online. But I learned from that, because I was passionate about it, because I love mountain biking, the process of learning all of these things about how do you show up in this community? How do you engage with people, sometimes in conflict, sometimes in solving problems, but how do you figure that out in social media and then bring that to your work? And that's a really good way that we talk about in training to train salespeople for authenticity. Start with something that you genuinely love, that if it's not your job, it would be great if there's direct alignment between the job that you do and what you really love to do. But if there's not, spend your off hours in something that you really love to do to really get the vibe of social media, how to show up, how to build a cadence, and then bring that over to your professional work.
I love what you're saying there. I think that there's a classic mistake that I really haven't seen many organizations really adjust to and do well yet, but where we are, and I was guilty of this 20 years ago, leading sales teams, this is what I was doing, is all of the training was concentrated on the product. You know, right. what do we make? How do we make it? What speeds and feeds? What's the benefit to the customer? What's the feature set? You know, we would get into benefits, and that was sort of the first, I remember when the first person started talking about what is the benefits and framing them in terms of what the customer's needs were.
Right.
That was a new idea. We're like, wow, that's cool, I guess. You know, we started talking about feature, function, benefit. Before, for a long time, it was just feature and function.
I remember.
And,
yeah.
And so now, you know, in today's world, if I found myself leading a group of salespeople again at a major corporation, I would spend 80% of my time educating them on the customer and the community and the industry and the unique challenges that their customers were dealing with and that they were facing. What is the competitive landscape within their target market? And 20% of my time talking about feature, function, benefit, or speeds and feeds, as we used to call it. There will always be someone who understands your own technology or your own product set or services well enough to support the sales process for you. You should spend all of your free time learning the customers and learning their challenges. And that feeds right into what we're talking about from a social selling standpoint, you know, that guru versus geek. And I want to get back to that because I have a question about that concept right. And that dichotomy, if you will, but certainly from an authority standpoint, having a presence and having a knowledge, that should all be customer facing, not somewhat or customer oriented, not necessarily what your company does. That should come through osmosis, right?
Right.
You should just know that because you walk the halls figuratively right. these days.
Right.
If you want to have a conversation with the customer, it's not going to be about your product. It's going to be about them and their problems and their unique challenges and the circumstances that they're dealing with. I tell my salespeople, the first question you have to ask yourself is, how does this company make money? How does the customer make money?
Yeah.
There's a lot of salespeople I haven't stopped to think about how that hospital makes money, how that organization, how that school district makes money. How right. that corporation makes money.
Yeah.
Because if you can align yourself with how they make money, you have at least the opportunity to build some credibility with the customer right. that you really understand what we're doing here and why we're doing it and why we make
yeah.
the decisions we make.
Yeah. Well, another question that we ask really early on is, what's keeping your customer up at night?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can zero in on that, again, that's putting yourself in the mind of the customer and the challenge that they're facing. And then understand, okay, well, if that's what's keeping them up at night, how does what I'm selling in any way help them solve that problem? And why is our solution better than the other alternatives that they have? That, you know, coming from a marketing agency background, one of my biggest gripes about marketing overall is that it is so massively complex as a student of marketing. You know, the four P's and the, you know, you could just get down into the weeds into all of this incredibly complex stuff. And I used to collect the frameworks that different agencies would use. And when I put all of these things together, I wound up with like this 10-page document of questions that you would have to ask in order to zero in positioning. So these days we try to cut through all of that, like agile, you know, what is the fastest path to revenue? Forget all of the strategy and all of that. Just answer the basic questions. Who's your customer? What's keeping them up at night? How do I solve that problem? And how is the problem that I'm solving or the way that I'm solving it better than anyone else? If you can answer those four questions, that's far better than spending, you know, months trying to develop a mission statement and a vision statement and a, you know, just all of this stuff. So simplifying it down to getting in, as you're saying, getting into the customer's shoes, understanding what is a roadblock for them in order to be successful, you know, ideally successful in generating revenue, because that's going to be, you know, a very clear and immediate motivation. But being able to answer that question is key to understanding, what am I going to talk about on social media that has any relevance and is going to get their attention?
So talk about, and if it was in there and I missed it, then I apologize, but you talked about this dichotomy of geeks versus gurus. You kind of broke down what a guru was, the knowledge, the presence, and the authenticity. So what is the difference between a guru and a geek?
So in my mind, you know, and it's a little simplistic, but it started out in recognizing sort of two personas that we would see showing up in social media conversations. And one persona is, oh, I've got the answer to whatever it is that you're looking for. You need this product and this product and this solution. And that's it. And that's, in my mind, sort of the guru. They always have an answer and they're going to cut straight to the answer. This is what you should do. The geek approaches it by trying to understand, well, what really is the heart of the problem that you're asking? And what are the ways that we could possibly get at a solution? And what in our, you know, in assessing those paths to a solution, how would we understand what's the best way to get there? So it's just a different mindset. And so in what we found in social media is that people who show up as a geek are far more likely to drive engagement than people that show up as a guru. A guru will get likes. Great comment. Okay, I got some metrics that say that I got X number of likes and maybe that's going to drive up my social media score or my social selling score. But the guy who's saying, well, wait a minute, you know, what are you really trying to solve? Because we could look at it this way and this way and this way. That opens the door for dialogue. And so for me, 90% of my really productive social selling activity on a place like LinkedIn never happens in public. It happens when I've been having a conversation on some thread somewhere where we've been going back and forth about trying to solve a problem. And then somebody who was watching that thread DMs me and says, hey, I was, you know, looking at that. Can we get on a call and have a conversation about that? That to me, you know, you see all these people, you know, worried about how everything is showing up in public. A lot of the best stuff is going on behind the scenes. So yeah. Showing up and showing that, hey, number one, I care enough about this topic to show up and engage in the conversation and not just try to show up and say, hey, look, I've got the answer. That communicates something to people who are looking for somebody to help them walk through a problem. And then being able to contribute to that conversation meaningfully displays your knowledge so that they know that, okay, not only is this person willing to have a conversation to take the time, but based on what they're sharing here, they've got some interesting insights and I want to dig in more. So that to me is usually that's the sweet spot, is when somebody sees a conversation that you've been having and then DMs you and says, I'd like to have a conversation. Can we get on a call?
Right. So the guru is about the answer. The geek is about the question. Mm-hmm. And looking at, and I think that's, you know, that's been my experience as well. The questions always start better conversations than the answer. Right.
Right.
In fact, I teach salespeople to don't give the answer, you know, not until we're way far down the line, just keep asking questions. Because there's power in asking good questions, and you can demonstrate authority and credibility by asking the right questions, right? And it's an easier way to receive information through questions, through thoughtful questions, than it is to be told something.
And you're making me laugh because I just had this conversation with my wife last night. And I think this is a total guy thing, right? Where a guy hears the first part of a sentence and is already jumping to the solution, right? And so my wife was telling me some story last night and I immediately jumped to, you know, what I thought the conclusion was. And she's just looking at me, you know, would you let me finish? Because where she was going was actually somewhere different. And I think that is... it's an impulse when you're involved in a space and you think you know where it's going to jump right to the answer. And I think you're absolutely right, is you've got to resist that impulse, not just from a tactical or a strategic reason, but because you don't know that you have all the information.
Yeah, well, I'm comforted to hear you had that conversation with your wife because I have it a lot. So I need to take some of my own medicine and slow myself down and ask more questions. That's for sure. I'm sure she would second that. I think she'll give this podcast 5 stars. All right. Well, look, Chris, this is an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for joining me today. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to get to know you or to learn more about your company?
So certainly I'm on LinkedIn. I'm accessible on LinkedIn. And just look me up as Chris Kenton. I'm also on Instagram. If you want to see what my real life is like, and I'm at Chris P. Kenton on Instagram, and both of those are easy ways to engage. And I'm certainly happy to talk shop all day long.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing your insight with us today about social selling and your experience and your journey, how you got to social rep. And I think it's fascinating. I know I made some notes and I took some things away from our conversation today. So thanks for that. We'll include John's information in our notes that we will post along with this show on our site. If you can find us at prosalesconnection.com/podcast, and you will find a backlog of all of our podcasts along with the show notes and how to reach any of our guests. So take a look there and reach out to Kenton and Chris Kenton and connect with them on LinkedIn as well. Look, before I wrap up, I want to take a minute just to thank everyone who's started to follow our podcast. We've been at this for a few months now, and it's exciting to see the momentum that's building. And it's inspiring for me and the rest of our team here to continue to try to find great people to have conversations with. If you like what we're doing, I'd be grateful if you could give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or your podcast app. Just take a few seconds to give me some love, and that will have a huge, huge impact on people's ability to find this podcast, because I think we're sharing some really great conversations. And just to show you guys how much I care and appreciate that, at the end of the week, I will select one of the people that have made a comment and given a review, and we'll do a 30-minute marketing coaching session. We'll kind of do whatever is that's important to you. We can look at your website, look at your messaging. We can talk about your sales and marketing process, your social media strategy, whatever's important to you. I'll spend 30 minutes with you and answer as many questions as we possibly can. So thank you again, everyone, for joining. And thank you again, Chris Kenton, for being our guest today. And remember that when B2B companies are growing faster, they're usually focused on the big three of B2B leadership. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mike.
Pro Sales Connection is a sales and marketing firm that has been helping B2B companies grow faster since 2009. Learn more about our proprietary fastest path to revenue process for B2B companies. Experiencing the possibilities begins with a short 15-minute call. Schedule yours at www.prosalesconnection.com and click Get Started.